from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Why don't you kill yourself? You should die. Messages sent to 12-year-old Rebecca Ann Sedgwick before she committed suicide September 9th, jumping off a tower at an abandoned cement plant. After her death, one of her tormentors, a 14-year-old girl, followed up with this: "Yes, I bullied Rebecca, and she killed herself, but I don't give a blank." You can fill it in. On Tuesday, Polk County, Florida Sheriff Grady Judd responded by arresting two girls, ages 12 and 14. They are now facing felony stalking charges. It's described as unprecedented, maybe a turning point. This hour, On Point: cyberbullying, young tormentors, and now the law. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What was your reaction to the Rebecca Ann Sedgwick cyberbullying and suicide story? Are you ready to criminalize cyberbullying? Put young cyberbullies up against the full force of the law. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We will talk in this hour with Sheriff Grady Judd, a man very visibly moved and moved to action by Rebecca Ann Sedgwick's suicide. Joining me first today from Orlando, Florida, near the town of Lakewood, where Rebecca was bullied and died, is Jerry Ann Sullivan, who has been following this story for the Orlando Sentinel. Jerry Ann, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Everyone has heard these headlines, but not everybody really knows the story. What happened here, Jerrianne?
To start probably with the beginning, around 2012, the 12-year-old and the 14-year-old, which the Sentinel has not named because of their ages, started bullying Rebecca Sedgwick. That went on for over a year. In 2012, in September, she was, I believe that's when she was attacked by the other 12-year-old. And then...
Were they schoolmates, all three of them?
Yes, they were all schoolmates. They went to school together before Rebecca's mom actually had to take her out of the school because the bullying got so out of hand.
And this was in Lakewood, which is sort of between Orlando and Tampa there in Florida.
It was in Lakeland, Florida,
which is about
an hour from Orlando. Yeah, so it's between Orlando and Tampa, and that's where it had happened. And in February of 2013, the 12-year-old girl attacked Rebecca physically and was suspended from school. And then the cyberbullying continued online through text messages, through social media, with various hurtful things said, telling her to kill herself. And then, unfortunately, on September 10th, she did commit suicide.
What was the source of this animosity? Do we know?
Right now, what we know is that the 14-year-old tormentor was upset that her current boyfriend had previously dated Rebecca Sedgwick. It's unclear why she was so upset about that, but that was the beginning of when the bullying started. And then the 12-year-old tormentor was actually a friend of Rebecca's, and the 14-year-old, over the course of, a certain amount of time that I think Sheriff Grady Judd will speak about, convinced the 12-year-old to stop being friends with Rebecca and start bullying her instead. And so that's why both girls were charged with aggravated stalking.
Now, how much is known about September 9th, the day of Rebecca's actual suicide? Where it was, how she got there, what happened?
What we do know about that day is that she had... she had transferred to Lawton Childs Middle School, which is not the original school she was at. Her mom had decided that it was necessary for her to switch schools. So she left for school that day, and the night before, her mom had seen her, using her cell phone. Her mom didn't want to take the cell phone away because she still wanted her to be able to communicate with her friends. And so the day of, she posted a message to a North Carolina boy who she had met at an airport once, and she said, "I'm jumping, and I can't take it anymore." That boy didn't report it to anyone that his friend was suicidal, and unfortunately that day is when deputies believe she jumped from a tower in a abandoned cement factory about a mile from her home.
I mean, we've seen that sort of terrible scene. We can just imagine. We'll hear from Sheriff Grady Judd, but here he was talking with ABC about his decision to arrest and charge the 14 and 12-year-old girls in connection with that suicide. The sheriff.
When I stood there at the base of that cement tower and saw that baby, that 12-year-old, deceased on the ground, it broke my heart. And I know it will break the hearts of everyone else across the country if they were in the position I was in. We're going to see that the full weight of the law comes down on them, and we want to send a message to the others in the community, not just the kids, but anyone who cyber stalks or stalks or bullies. If we can make a case, you'll be arrested, because people deserve to live a healthy, normal life, not tormented by bullies.
Sheriff Grady Judd, he makes a compelling case and has made it very publicly. What exactly are the charges here that people are calling unprecedented, a kind of turning point in the bullying, cyberbullying saga nationally, Jerrian?
Yes. So the charges that Grady Judd arrested them under on Monday were third-degree felonies for aggravated stalking. And so the 14-year-old is currently in the custody of the Department of Juvenile Justice, and the 12-year-old was released on house arrest to her parents. And Judd has said that the reason the 12-year-old was released is because she was very regretful. Both girls admitted to the abuse when deputies questioned them, but the 14-year-old was very unapologetic, and then he started the show with the comment that she had put on her Facebook. And since then, her parents have come out to various media outlets denying the charges and have hired a lawyer, whereas the 12-year-old, has not done that. And so she was released to her parents. What could happen as far as punishment under these felony aggravated stalking charges is still unknown, but there is a variety of things that could happen to the two.
Can you flesh out what made Rebecca Ann so vulnerable here? I mean, maybe there was nothing. I mean, we know it's not always logical, not always rational at all. Mm-hmm. But did she have special vulnerability that might have drawn their brutal attention to her that might even have led her to this consideration of suicide under those attacks?
It's hard to say for sure. Her friends at her funeral did tell the media that she was a cheerful girl, and they all wore bright colors to really honor her positive attitude towards life. So that's something I think is important that tends to get lost in the story, is that she, her friends remembered her as a very positive, cheerful girl. It seems that, what her family says is just the constant, unrelentless abuse on her phone, on social media, at school was just too much for her. And she had gone to a counselor. She had tried, her family had tried various things. In December, her mom noticed cuts on her wrist, and Rebecca ended up spending a few days in the hospital kind of dealing with that. But unfortunately, the bullying still continued. And from, what the sheriff says and what her family says, they think it was just the relentlessness of the attacks that really drove this girl to take her own life.
Jerrian Sullivan, please stand by there in Orlando, Florida. I want to bring in right now, if I may, from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Justin Patchen. He's a professor of criminal justice, Department of Political Science, at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. His book forthcoming is Words Wound, Delete Cyberbullying and Make Kindness Go Viral. That's a nice idea. Justin Patchen, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be with you.
Sheriff Grady Judd, who we will speak with in a few minutes here, has brought out the big legal charges here, felony stalking charges against a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old. Is there any precedent for this, Justin?
Not that I know of. As you mentioned, it seems extreme. We've been talking about this sort of approach for years on whether or not it makes sense to further criminalize cyberbullying behaviors. But this is the first time we've seen especially felony charges applied to especially somebody so young.
I mean, the ages are eye-popping, but I don't know if it's extreme. After all, Rebecca is dead.
That's true. And I think we're going to learn a lot about how this case progresses in terms of whether or not this is appropriate. One thing we do know is it's never happened before, so we don't know whether or not it's going to result in fewer kids cyberbullying others. In the past, sort of these kinds of criminal responses haven't done a lot to deter teens from kind of irrational and irresponsible behaviors. I get it. I mean, the sheriff's upset. The community's upset. We all wish Rebecca was still here. I think there's a lot of things that could and should have been done before it reached this point. And now we're looking back and thinking, okay, we need to hold somebody accountable.
We're going to look at what may be a turning point in the treatment of cyberbullying. Gerri-Ann Sullivan, I've just got you for another minute. What's public opinion seem like in Rebecca Ann's hometown? Do people support the sheriff in these heavy charges or not?
Mostly. From all of the feedback we've received from the community is a lot of support in regards to the arrest, mostly because cyberbullying is prevalent among middle school and teens. And according to the CDC, the suicide rate for 15 to 14-year-olds increases when they have been bullied. And a 2000 study from the Yale School of Medicine showed bullying victims were 2 to 9 times more likely to report thoughts of suicide. So the community here, and especially teachers, educators, have really reached out to me and are in support of at least them being charged, because it, you know, brings attention to it. And also a lot of these teachers have dealt with stuff like this and, you know, need help from parents and law enforcement to, you know, get rid of it.
Unbelievable story, tragic story. And now we're on new legal ground here. Gerri-Ann Sullivan, terrific reporter from the Orlando Sentinel, has been covering all this in Lakeland, Florida, where Rebecca Ann Sedgwick died. Gerri-Ann, thank you very much for being with us in this hour.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the felony charges against two girls and the cyberbullying death of 12-year-old Rebecca Ann Sedgwick in Florida, looking at young tormentors and the law. We are on new territory since felony stalking charges were brought against these two girls this week in Florida. Here's the mother of Rebecca Ann Sedgwick talking with ABC News yesterday about Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd's arrest of two girls in connection with her daughter's suicide.
I felt like a big weight had been lifted, and I cried. It was a mixture of tears. It was relief. It was sadness because Becca's not here.
A mother who has lost her daughter and is happy to see the charges brought. There was contrition from at least one of the families of the alleged tormentors. And here's an interview with Matt Gutman from ABC. The father of the 12-year-old said he wishes he'd been more attentive to his daughter's online activity.
I feel horrible about the whole situation. It's my fault, maybe, that I don't know more about that kind of stuff. I wish I did.
The 14-year-old herself was not contrite in her comments online, and her parents evasive. This from ABC News.
You would check her Facebook?
Yeah, I would check her Facebook every time that she would get on it.
Well, every night she would get on it.
Yeah.
So you checked her Facebook every night?
Yeah.
We checked it. We did everything we could. Sheriff Grady Judd, who's brought these charges, who's seen them put against these two girls, is with us now from Winter Haven, Florida. Sheriff Judd, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello, Tom. How are you today?
I'm very well. This is being called a potential turning point in the way we handle young cyberbullying in this country. Why have you gone to this extent, brought these significant charges against these quite young girls?
Yes, Tom. The reason this occurred is because it left the world of cyberbullying and crossed over into stalking, and specifically aggravated stalking, because our victim was only 12 years old when she jumped to her death. And this outrageous action, this outrageous bullying, led to and contributed to the death of this very fragile child in the first place.
So your view is that they deserve felony charges. If they're convicted, what are the ramifications for a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, just in terms of punishment? Is there anything that can be done?
Yes, they absolutely deserve these felony charges. And our job is to look out for the best interest of the victim and or the victim's family and to make sure there's no other victims. But they're in the juvenile system. We are not recommending that they go to the adult system. So the juvenile system can plan sanctions that are in the children's best interest. Do we want to see them locked up and the key thrown away? Absolutely not. But what we want to see is probation. We want to see sanctions that keeps them out of the social media world. We want to see anger management classes. We want to see socialization classes to teach them how to live appropriately in society, because we want these girls to be successful, and we don't ever want to see them back in the criminal justice system, ever.
What did you see in the text of cyberbullying messages that helped persuade you that you needed to get tough here?
We saw messages such as, you need to drink bleach and die. Nobody likes you. Why don't you kill yourself? Just outrageous comments. And then while the investigation's ongoing, after this child dies from suicide, then, and while these folks know they're under investigation, the 14-year-old on her Facebook says, yes, I bullied Rebecca, and yes, she killed herself, and I don't give a bleep. Well, that tells you that we have a significant problem.
Sheriff Judd, how full has your access been to these messages? Have you been able to see all of them on Facebook or you name it? Have you had full access or not?
We have not had full access yet. We have a lot of witnesses, and we do have access to some Facebook messages that we were able to retrieve from their devices. But we are moving forward with going to the internet provider. One is Kik, and it's located in Canada, and the other is Ask FM, and it is in Latvia.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having a very difficult time, because it's outside of the continental United States, getting cooperation. We do think that they'll respond to us. They've indicated, but there's a lot of hoops to jump through, and it's taken a prolonged period of time. That's why after 5 or 6 weeks, we had not yet made an arrest, because we'd identified these bullies within the first week of the investigation. But we were trying to get every bit of the investigative information. However, during this process, this one 14-year-old child busts out here once again and does this makes these outrageous statements. So our attitude was, she doesn't get it and her parents don't get it, so we're going to have to act, and we did.
Are you confident that you have or will have the necessary evidence to press home these charges?
Oh, there's no doubt at all. We don't bring criminal charges unless we're confident that we have a complete investigation. We have independent witnesses. We have Facebook sites. We have text information, all that we gathered off of cell phones from friends and the suspects. And the suspects cooperated in the beginning in that they made admissions to us. Of course, they painted themselves in the best light. So we have really almost the ideal case. Admissions by the suspects, independent witnesses,
mm-hmm.
and physical evidence from cell phones and other devices.
Sheriff Judd, why do you think these two young girls singled Rebecca out so fiercely in this case?
This all began as a middle school dust-up. Rebecca's ex-boyfriend was dating the 14-year-old. And as a result, she had been known to be a bully all the way back into elementary school. So she started bullying Rebecca. The 12-year-old was good friends with Rebecca, but the 14-year-old convinced her not only to break off that friendship or that relationship, but also to bully Rebecca. So we see her as kind of the ringleader. So at the end of the day, what started really as a middle school dust-up, and it moved to a fight at the school. So all of this bullying was not online. Some of it was at the middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And then when their mother created the intervention, meaning Rebecca's mother created the intervention. There were several interventions for Rebecca, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And she separated them and got them away from the bullies at school. They still bullied her online, or if you will, through the social media.
What about the parents in this case? We've heard some contrition and some not. Should there be charges on that front? Might there yet be?
Well, that's interesting that you say that. We had two diametrically opposed situations. We had our 12-year-old whose parents were very contrite. They were very remorseful. They were very upset. They understood the gravity of what their daughter had done. And in fact, before law enforcement got into it, had already taken their daughter over to Rebecca's mother to personally apologize. On the other hand, the other bully that we charged shows absolutely no emotion. The family is in total denial. Oh, my child would never bully anybody. They would never bully anybody online. This has not occurred. Just absolute total denial beyond our wildest understanding. Well, not only did we see this, but when we arrested these two girls on Monday night, the way it works in Florida is when the sheriff or the police arrest, we deliver them to the custody of the Department of Juvenile Justice, the state agency. They evaluate the charges, and the girls, although they were problems at school, had never been arrested before and didn't have criminal charges, so they were released back in the custody of their parents later Monday night,
okay,
with sanctions. One of those sanctions was to show up at court the next day in juvenile court. Well, the circuit judge had a hearing, as is protocol, and he saw the same thing we did. So at the end of the hearing, he allowed the 12-year-old to go home with the remorseful parents who understood the gravity of the situation. But when he dealt with the 14-year-old, he rearrested her and put her back in custody because of the lack of concern, the lack of understanding, and the total denial by her and her parents.
Are there criminal charges options for those parents or not? What could you charge them with if you wanted to?
I can tell you at this point in the investigation, we're not able to charge them criminally. And I say at this point in the investigation, it's not completed. There is laws that require that you look out for the best interest of the child. You can charge someone with child abuse, child neglect. You could charge someone with contributing to the delinquency or dependency of a child. But there is a difference in not paying attention to children and that conduct being criminal.
Sheriff Judd, we have on with you right now the co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center, National Center out of Wisconsin, who's been paying very close attention to all of your activity there and is not sure that these big charges are the way to go. Could you take a question from him? Would you mind?
I'll be more than happy to take a question.
Justin Patchen, here's the sheriff. He's making history maybe here with these charges. You've expressed some uncertainty about whether this is the way to go. What's your question or comment for the sheriff, Justin?
Well, Tom, I think my perspective has always been, and I think the sheriff will agree with me, and he summarized his perspective early on, that this is the last thing we want to do. The last thing we want to do is charge kids who are involved in cyberbullying with a criminal act. There are a lot of opportunities to deal with the behavior before it gets to that point. Parents should be involved. Schools should be involved.
But here we are.
That's exactly right. So I've always suggested that at the end of the road, if nothing else works, then perhaps a criminal charge is necessary. And so this is perhaps even precisely the case where that would be applied. So I think the sheriff would agree. I think we'd be on the same page that he would rather have not had done this, but he's sort of forced into this based on the seriousness of the behaviors and the lack of remorse and the whole constellation of the evidence that he's looking at.
Sheriff Judd, do you think that if you've already sort of pulled out the threat here, you're acting on it. Will that be a message to young people and their parents around the country? Is that part of what you're trying to do here is, frighten other kids off of this path?
Well, I agree with our colleague here. You know, we're the last resort, not the first. And I've said that over and over on national news that law enforcement, the police, does not need to be involved in bullying. We shouldn't be involved in bullying, and quite frankly, we're not going to get involved in bullying. But we're the end result when it goes from bullying that was not appropriately addressed and it became criminal activity, which means that this child had to be chronically bullied. It had to be over a period of time. It had to be harassing, intimidating,
yeah.
Had to create terror, and that's what happened here. So, yes, we hope we're sending a message. I had one news reporter say, well, are you making an example out of them? And I said, you're darn right we're making an example out of them. And we're going to make an example out of everybody else that goes from bullying to intimidating to terrorizing someone, and it rises to the level of a criminal event. Do we want it there? No. And I've coached over and over, to include last night at a meeting at that very school where it began, that parents are the first line of defense. Don't get us involved. Be the best parent.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sheriff, if I may, there's so many callers. Could I bring one in from South Carolina for you who deals
sure,
with young women?
Please.
Michelle in Charleston, South Carolina. Thanks for calling, Michelle. You're on with Sheriff Grady Judd.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine.
I wanted to make a couple of points. I do some training with young girls in safety and prevention of violence, and part of that has to do with cyberbullying and cyber attacks. One of these is that I'm really glad that law enforcement has intervened. It shows that this is very, very serious. I see parents who have lack of information, who have denial, partly because they just see a fragment of what their children do.
And what about the people doing, the kids doing the cyberbullying? Where's their empathy, Michelle?
Thank you for the pitch. That's where I'm going. Who's going to teach that to children? I don't want to overemphasize this, but the entertainment and media environment in which kids swim today is full of examples of cruelty as entertainment. It's very fun, whether you're watching Punk'd or Survivor or any of the television shows and other online games, whatever. It's fun. This is really fun. And if you can be more outrageous and extreme than the next person, you're up. You're up on the ladder.
Michelle, thank you for your call. Sheriff Judd, what about it? Are you ready to blame this on the culture, our culture?
I think Michelle is correct that it certainly feeds that culture. And another thing that occurs, keep in mind that parents, for the most part, are not as technologically savvy as their kids. These devices have gotten very inexpensive. So what the kids have done is they all have their devices, they have their absolutely free apps, and they kind of move into this cyber world outside of the supervision of the parents. So therein lies a huge problem when parents don't learn, don't pay attention, and the next thing you know, you have a bunch of kids out in this world by themselves, and it may start online or it may start in person, and then words become reality. And as a result of they get to creating an atmosphere where it's survival of the fittest.
I mean, the reality that you saw at the base of that cement tower seems to have moved you very deeply, Chef Judd.
It moved me very deeply. I can tell you that I have grandchildren from the ages of 3 or 4 weeks old to my oldest granddaughter is 15. As I stood there that morning and saw that 12-year-old child, that baby, I could relate to my own family, and I saw that she leapt from a high location on that tower to her death, and I thought, my gosh, what is behind this?
Chef Grady Judd, I know we have to let you go here. We're grateful to you for joining us. Thank you very much, sir. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the felony charges brought against two girls in the cyberbullying death of 12-year-old Rebecca Ann Sedgwick in Florida. Looking at young tormentors and the law, we're on new ground here with the charges that were brought In the case investigated by Sheriff Grady Judd in Florida. He's just been with us. Justin Patchen is with us as well. He's co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. He's at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and joins us from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Sue Schellenbarger joins us in just a moment from the Wall Street Journal. She's written about American teens these days and the empathy gap. Justin, I want to get you on this because I can hear your readiness, maybe in this case, to say okay, but a lot of trepidation about this in your voice as well. I mean, we hear that this kind of cyberbullying is endemic. It's rampant all over the place. Are we supposed to picture a future of a bunch of 12-year-olds going around with ankle bracelets?
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, cyberbullying, we've been studying it for over 10 years, and we seem to hear about more extreme cases every day in the media. And, you know, the public wants to do something. They want to make a statement that we're not going to tolerate this as a society. I'm just not convinced that, on balance, as a general practice, further criminalization is a long-term strategy. I mean, again, it's definitely necessary. I'm a trained criminologist, so I know the role of the criminal justice system in certain cases. I just think dealing with kids so young, you have to use, you know, a softer glove. And in this particular case, I trust the sheriff is looking at all the evidence, and he sees a lot more than we do, and he recognizes that this is a case where the criminal charges will be applied. But there are so many people that failed, Rebecca, along the way. I mean, adults and teens alike. It's just heartbreaking, as you pointed out, that something should have been done. I mean, this was going on for months, and yet it led to this.
Florida's been a trendsetter with it amending its criminal code on cyberbullying. Could these charges be brought anywhere in this country or only in some states, Justin?
Well, I'm sure every state would have, you know, stalking laws, and there are existing laws on the books that could deal with the most extreme cases of online harassment, and that's a lot why I've been reluctant to try to, you know, further criminalize online bullying, because I think, again, in these types of cases where a criminal charge would be necessary, I think we've got some laws on the books, but it's just too bad it had to come to this.
Tons of response online. Carl says on Twitter, "Forgive me if this seems simple, but yes, I'm ready to criminalize this behavior. No one should be treated this way." Jonathan says it's time to hold both the kids and the parents accountable. The parents should be charged with aiding and abetting. I mean, Nancy says, you know, the bullying beats a person down just like an abusive relationship. It drives a person to instability over which many do not have control. Yes, there should be punishment. Barry writes to us on the website, says, "I can understand Sheriff Judd's motives. However," he says, "the two girls, on the other hand, will probably feel scapegoated, bearing the hate of the community for a commonplace, if reprehensible, cultural practice that pervades our society." Nate in Colton, New York. Nate, thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Much like everyone, I really support the decision of the sheriff to press these charges. I think it draws a line in the sand for the future that has not yet been drawn. I've taught social-emotional learning skills to kids in middle school the same age as these ones, and they get it. They understand. They get the lingo, but they don't see their actions as reprehensible. And I think this creates a precedent that I hope can be followed. I also don't want to see 12-year-olds walking around in chains, but I think the more consequence that we see, the less we will see this happening. I really do believe that there needs to be greater steps taken by schools, by teachers, by principals to prevent this from happening. But are they supposed to go in and look at their Facebook all day? I don't think that's the answer either.
And yet, just holding a big felony sledgehammer over everybody, who knows if that will actually work? But I get it. You're for it. I appreciate your call, Nate. Leslie in Magnolia, Delaware. Leslie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm definitely in agreement for the felony charges being pressed here. I do think that children need to learn consequences for their actions. But do we actually want to move forward? Are we actually going to move forward to be able to put the programs in place to be able to help these children? On both ends of the matter, it seems as if the stability of the children were both both of their behalf.
You mean the bullies and Rebecca, the bullied, both had problems here.
Yeah, exactly, definitely. And as somebody who was a survivor and bully was one of them, never realized more now how it impacted my life. It's definitely going to impact the future of other children if we don't have these kind of programs in place. So what do they expect to do, and what kind of programs are they going to be putting in place for these children?
So take this as encouragement. I mean, maybe this is the way to go, but you can't just throw all of this, these cultural issues, these intimate bullying issues, in the lap of the law and felony charges. Leslie, I appreciate your call. I want to welcome Sue Schallenberger into the conversation here. She is the terrific work and family columnist for The Wall Street Journal, always has a very sensitive eye on what's going on, and she wrote a column on Wednesday that came right into the thick of this. It was headlined, "The Teenage Empathy Gap." Sue joins us from Springfield, Oregon today. Sue, thanks very much for joining us. What's the gap? What are you writing about?
I think one reason that this behavior baffles adults and horrifies them, Tom, is that this is a time these kids are 14 and 12-year-old offenders and a 12-year-old victim. They're in a perfect storm of biological change. Research is finding that the teenage brain isn't fully developed for empathy and social skills. At the same time, stress hormones are kicking in. Kids can't control their own feelings yet. And the drive for peer acceptance overwhelms everything for them, eclipsing what their parents have taught them about empathy and good behavior. And they are consumed by a desire to be accepted, and what their peers think of them takes over all of their behavior. And I think the research is telling us that we need to be perhaps even more vigilant and understanding during this stage of life.
Are you saying with that, Sue, that it's ever been thus? This is just the way humans are, time immemorial, nothing new under the sun here?
No, absolutely not. What's happened is that a whole new private jungle has arisen for teens to do their harm in, that the cyberspace is a place where, kind of like Lord of the Flies, kids can go off and act out these desire for power and social influence over each other. And this is what behooves parents to really understand that they have to transfer all of their real-world parenting skills online. It's not easy, but it's the only thing that a good parent can do.
Our earlier caller suggested that we have now a cultural problem, that we live in a media culture at the least, which almost celebrates cruelty sometimes, and that has created a different environment that may leave our teens today even less empathetic than they might have historically been. Do you buy that, Sue?
There's an opportunity for that in the absence of parental understanding and good school programs to teach kids other options. Schools can start early with social work and psychology training in the classroom and in the culture. We don't do that here. Parents can tell kids when they hand them their first cell phone that you have no right to privacy on these devices. I will always be watching everything you do, and getting guidance from, say, online monitoring software such as SpectreSoft. There's a good website, stopcyberbullying.org, where parents can get advice on how to talk to teenagers about this. So all that needs to be done for this culture to take over is for good parents and good schools to do nothing. If parents and schools act, it can be counteracted. Kids want good role models.
Let's go to Jared in Columbia, South Carolina. Jared, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. This exact same thing happened to all four of my children, but just recently, Wednesday, a child in his classroom approached him and told him the exact same thing. I don't know, maybe the child heard this news report, but he told my son, you should go kill yourself. Nobody likes you in the class.
Oh.
He does what I told him and says, you know, I'm here to learn. That doesn't work. He approaches the teacher. It's the end of the day. The teacher says, well, I didn't see it. He then follows my child to the bus and telling him the same thing, passing by teachers, passing by other students.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm at the point now, because it's a holiday here in South Carolina.
Okay.
On Monday, what am I supposed to do? Because my children don't have the internet. It's just they've been bullied for the past 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I've been up to the school several times, talked with the principal, and it's always been the other person's fault. It's always been the other person's fault. My child has special needs, and so he's been a target.
Listen, Jared, hang on a second. Let's see if we can get you some advice here, Jared. Hang on. You be strong. This is a tough situation. Boy, do we know it. Jared, hang on. Justin, what do you say to Jared?
Well, I think it's important that he continue to be a support system for his child, and so keep that line of communication open so that when his child is being bullied, he knows he can turn to his father for to their father for help. I think it's important to document everything. So what happened, where, when, who is involved, who might have seen it. Keep in constant contact with the school, especially since it seems to be happening there. Schools have an obligation to respond, and most schools are willing to respond if it's clear that these things are happening.
But it sounds, in Jared's case, that the school's not particularly sensitive to this, perhaps, and that they're not responding. Can he get leverage somehow here to get people to pay attention if they're not inclined to?
Well, if Rebecca's story doesn't provide leverage, I don't know what will. And it's hard to know. Sometimes, you know, I talk to a lot of parents of kids who are being bullied and cyberbullied, and they think the school isn't doing anything. You got to remember, schools can't really divulge what kind of disciplinary action they take against other students because of federal laws. And so things might be happening, they might not. The bottom line is the bullying has to stop. If it doesn't stop, then he needs to further communicate with the school that it's still happening and something needs to be done.
So he's within his rights as a parent to say, there is bullying, it must stop, you've got to do it, school, you've got to stop it.
Absolutely.
Jared, is
Absolutely.
That helpful advice, Jared?
When you think about some of these school shootings, this is the result of kids who have been bullied, singled out, and has not been handled well, and then we have a mass tragedy. So I agree with these kids being charged because kids at 12 and 14 are no longer like it was when we were younger. These kids are exposed to things that we weren't exposed to, so we were 16 and 17 years old. They're sagging with their dress. Their stuff is tight with the girls. They're almost young adults now in middle school.
Jared, I appreciate you. Stand strong. Be strong with the school. Be clear with them about what's happening and what your children need to be safe. And we wish you the best. Thank you for calling. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Bobby in Charlottesville, Virginia. Bobby, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling because I do agree with the children being charged. I have a daughter who she is now an adult. She was assaulted by a girl in school, and we charged her. And after the charge took place, she was verbally attacked. She was attacked through all of the social media.
You mean your daughter was further attacked after charges were brought against the bullier?
Yes. The judge basically gave the child who assaulted her a slap on the hand and said, okay, you know, we see that you're remorseful. We're going to let you go. All of her friends and people who knew her, she was a cheerleader and a popular girl, and people began to really bully and attack my daughter. The things they said to her just, it shocked me. And I have worked in the social services field for years. And what ended up happening is my daughter became very depressed. She ended up with bulimia, and she started self-mutilating. We immediately got her into therapy, and she ended up in a treatment program for 8 months.
Wow.
The bullying was... She almost took her life.
But in your case, Bobby, trying to understand it, charges were brought, and that did not solve the situation. Legal charges were brought.
Right. It did not solve it. The judge gave her a slap on the hand. I do not believe these children need to be put in juvenile detention. I do not believe they need to go to jail. I believe that we need to find some way to find funds to get these children help. And I do not believe that a child's life should be destroyed and they have this record of being a horrible person for the rest of their lives if there is treatment out there to get them what they need.
You're saying that the bully's lives shouldn't be destroyed.
Right, right. I mean, my daughter went through a lot. We had, you know, 2.5 years of our lives were just up and down. You know, I didn't know, am I going to have to sit up with my daughter tonight? Is she going to take her life? You know, is this going to be the last day?
Oh, Bobby, that's as hard as it gets. And in spite of all that, we hear you're ready to be forgiving. Others are very ready to jump on the big charges bandwagon. Justin Patchen, there are more calls than we're ever going to get here with stories just like this. They go on and on. Where do you see this going? Is our country now going to turn to the hand of the law to try and address the problem of bullying, cyberbullying?
I hope not. I mean, it's cliche now to say that the criminal justice system is a blunt tool. I mean, again, it's necessary in certain situations. I do want to go back to what the sheriff said, and I agree with him. And Bobby was relaying this as well, that these girls need help. And so if it
you're talking
takes
about the bullies when you
the
say
bullies,
these girls.
Yeah, those who are bullying others need help. And if it takes, the criminal or juvenile justice system in order to offer that help, then that's what's necessary. So, we're going to be watching this case closely because it is so different than what we typically see. And again, over a decade, we've been looking at this.
Sue Schellenbarger, you know how difficult this is. And really getting in and dealing with these cases one by one, one can imagine the country just shrugging it off to the sheriffs of the country instead of the counselors.
It breaks my heart to hear Bobby and other parents. A promising alternative treatment that's emerging is community service for offenders. And this is run by StopCyberbullying.org. The kids are given the opportunity to speak to groups of kids about what they did, make videos about what they did, and also try to use the social influence the bully has to repair the reputation of the victim of the bullying. This has been done a dozen or so times around the country. My hope is that we'll find some way to find a creative alternative treatment that will demonstrate to kids how they should treat each other and help the bully make amends.
Well, it looks as though we're going to have a trial in Florida, a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old on felony charges. The whole country watching. We'll see if that makes an impact. Sue Schellenbarger, you are such a nuanced, wonderful observer of our culture and life. We so appreciate you coming on today. Thank you very much, Sue.
My pleasure.
Sue Schellenbarger, the work and family columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and Justin Patchen, at the Department of Political Science, University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. Justin, thank you for your thoughts today.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Good luck to everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.